Hello, ladies. Welcome to episode number 112 of The Big Web Show, Everything Web That Matters. I'm your host, Jeffrey Zeldman. Today's episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Zeldman. This episode is also brought to you by Typekit. Typekit works with the quality Foundry partners to bring you a stunning collection of fonts for use in desktop applications and on your websites. Choose the fonts you need from a library featuring thousands of options and then sync them to your desktop with Creative Cloud or use Typekit's service to host them on the web. Or do both and bring a new level of consistency to the work you produce online and in print. Last but not least, today's episode is brought to you by SaneBox. S-A-N-E-B-O-X. Do you get too much email? If so, SaneBox is for you. It moves unimportant emails out of your inbox into a separate folder and summarizes them for you. This way, you only have important emails in your inbox and can process everything else in bulk. SaneBox works everywhere, on any email provider, client, or device. The folder you help create for your SaneBox will show up wherever or however you check your email. And how does it know what's important, you ask? It analyzes your past behavior, like which emails you open, which you respond to, how quickly you respond, and how often, and then determines the importance of incoming emails without ever looking at the content, just the subject lines. SaneBox has lots of other features too. One-click unsubscriber, snoozing non-urgent emails, moving attachments to Dropbox, and lots more. I get hundreds of emails every day. And if you're like me, you're 5'5" and quite handsome. Now, if you're like me, you need something like this to help you sift through what does and doesn't need your immediate attention in your email inbox. With SaneBox, you can get back to work. For a $10 credit, go to SaneBox.com/MuleRadio. Again, that's SaneBox.com/MuleRadio for $10 off. Thank you very much. And with no further ado, I would like to introduce today's guest speaker. He's a handsome bachelor from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Matt Wilto Markey writes, or Marquis, depending on what street he's on at the time. Matt Wilto Marquis, or Markey, writes code for a living at Filament Group in Boston and crashes his motorcycle for free on the streets of North Cambridge. Matt is chair of the Responsive Images Community Group of the W3C. He's a technical editor at A List Apart. He helped, he actually moved A List Apart's code to open source via GitHub. He was responsible for that whole thing and still is, and is the editor of that action. And he is a former member of the jQuery mobile team, also a developer at filamentgroup.com, and lots of other stuff. Matt, welcome. Thank you.
I try to keep busy, you know.
Do you have dogs?
I have a dog. I have one dog, a little orange Portuguese Podengo named Zero.
What's a Podengo?
They're like Ibizans or those Faroe hounds. Really weird looking, giant ears. Look like deer.
Mia Farrow hounds?
That's the one. He looks a lot like Mia Farrow. In the right light, you know. Not always.
We're going to avoid a whole, I just started to blunder into something and we don't want to.
Okay. I trust you.
Yeah. Now my mind's a blank, Matt.
I feel like this is my fault somehow.
My mind's a blank in part because I just got it so filled with information. We just came home to our separate homes, obviously.
Yes, we did.
You're in Massachusetts, I'm in New York, but from an event apart, Atlanta, where you just gave a presentation on responsive images, ending with a surprise announcement about browsers and standards.
I think the talk went pretty good. And the surprise announcement was that the picture element is officially coming to a browser near you.
Can you get into more detail?
Absolutely. With what I know, which is not a hell of a lot more than the average person would pick up on a mailing list, Mozilla has the picture element scheduled for the first quarter of 2014, which it is currently. So that's good news. We have a member of the RICG working on the Blink version with the official blessing of the Blink team, which is exciting. And we've heard largely positive grunts and noises out of the other browsers. So
Google Chrome?
Yep, the Blink rendering engine that we have a guy working on that goes into Chrome. So yeah.
What about Opera, Safari? Does Opera have Blink as well?
Opera's Blink now, yeah. WebKit has been largely positive, though they haven't officially rubber-stamped anything, but they're still working pretty closely with the Blink team, so it's pretty safe to say if one does it, the other's, barring incident, going to follow suit.
That's right, I forgot. Chrome is no longer WebKit, it's now Blink.
Mm.
So it's a fork.
Yeah, still a lot of shared code in there. Which is handy.
Because they want interoperability too.
Interop, yeah.
Wow, that was scary.
Yeah, I mean, the two teams' priorities are in slightly different places, but they're all good places to be.
And so IE?
Silent, because of patent things I can't even begin to understand. Certain companies can't actively contribute to certain lists, and they're not able to comment on any of the lists we're on, as far as I know. But they were one of the earliest supporters of
right.
the picture element. So unless something has changed, I have high hopes.
There's a lot that I don't know. In fact, what I don't know could fill volumes. But I do know that a lot of times when Microsoft is involved in standardization, they actually stay invisible.
Yeah.
For fear that their presence will derail it. For fear that people will say, oh, it's Microsoft. It must be bad. Oh, they're bad guys. So
it could well be. We sent them an email a while back that was like, so can you speak at all to your roadmap? And we got back a form letter that was like, thanks for your interest in upcoming versions of Internet Explorer. So didn't really go far. But I mean,
do you work with Apple at all? And is that kind of similar at this point?
They're pretty tight-lipped. I mean, they were not... Certain things they're not shy about. I mean, they supported the SRC set syntax
right
pretty actively. But yeah, it's tough.
So there was some so before we get ahead of ourselves, for people haven't paid attention to the saga, let's go back a little bit.
Yes,
let's go back a little bit. So it used to be that we figured we were all designing for one fixed width desktop, and everything was for browsers, and everything was 800 pixels or 1024 pixels or whatever. And you'd send us 172 PPI image and you'd be done.
Yes.
And obviously now we have many things to juggle, from not just viewports, but pixel densities, bandwidth of various devices. And then, of course, all these, it's not just we summarize this as retina images, but it's much more than that.
Right. I mean, we've got pixel densities that are higher than the human eye can ever perceive at this point.
Right. I think you said we got flies now.
Mm-hmm. It's right. Like butterfly eyes needed to see some of these new Androids coming out, like new Samsungs. Right. But yeah, I mean, it basically, what it boils down to practically right now is 1x, 2x images, standard resolution versus retina-esque, somewhere in that ballpark. But that alone's enough that the weight of images on the web is ridiculous and increasing very rapidly over time.
Now, it was Bruce Lawson, I believe, who came up originally with the image element, with the picture.
Yeah. He put out that straw man pretty early on. We actually dug back through. It was pitched as early as 2007. Like, this is not we are not the first ones to kind of champion this whole thing.
But that was before there was anything. Before there were high pixel densities or retina images. Were people just anticipating that there would be high density displays? Was that why? Or was it more of an art directional thing?
It was, they framed it, which is not unlike what we're doing now. They kind of framed it more as like for flexible layouts. Pre-officially responsive, but just percentage-based layouts. They were like, we should have a method of serving up smaller images to smaller layouts, which is half of the battle we're fighting right now.
Like Patrick Griffiths's Elastic layouts in 2005 or 2006.
Yep, exactly. Which, if it took off, that might have been nice. those early picture proposals. We could have got out in front of this a little bit, but we're getting there. We're making progress.
How happy are you as a web developer?
Like in my life?
Yeah.
I do okay.
See, my problem is I hate needless complexity. Mm. And I think my friends and I were successful with the web standards movement in a way because we just kept saying, this is too complicated. Let's keep it simple. Let's keep it really simple.
Yeah.
We shouldn't design for four browsers. We should design for, we should just design for everything, for all devices. Well,
which is a weird kind of simplicity. I mean, it is. It's simpler, but I could see where a lot of people read that as like, that means you're designing for infinite browsers. That's so much more complicated.
Well, that's what responsive design is. It's not, right? It's not like iPhone and three other breakpoints. It's everything. Everything.
Xboxes and whatnot.
I mean, I published Ethan's book, and it still took me a while to figure that out. Mm-hmm. Like, I read the galleys, I read the thing, I'd seen him give the lecture like 100 times, and then one day I was like, oh wait, it's not about breakpoints.
Hey, I do it for a living, I'm still just figuring it out. Everybody is. I closed the talk with something along those lines. The stuff, in relative terms, is pretty new. We're all sort of just getting the hang of it. We're going to screw up a lot of stuff, like serve a giant images to people for a little while, but we're going to get better,
What was your first responsive project was the Boston Globe, which you worked on with Filament Group and Ethan Marcotte. Is that correct?
God, was that my first? No pressure, huh? I think it was, yeah.
Right, yeah. So it wasn't like first you redesigned your blog.
No.
And then after 5 projects like that, a newspaper approached you. It was like... What happened there? You guys got the Boston Globe job and said, we want to do this responsively. Did they say it to you?
They were actually really good about that. They were like, they'd read Ethan's book. They were pumped on this idea. For my part, I think I got brought in because there were a couple of gigs going on at the same time. So when the Globe kicked off, it was a pretty big deal. And I think I came in to pick up some of the other ones, and then I weaseled my way onto the Globe because it seemed the most exciting. I mean, when I say I worked on the Globe, it's like I did all of 2%, and Ethan and Scott, heavy lifting.
Scott Gell and Ethan Marcotte.
Yeah, yeah.
How big is the Filament Group? How big was your team?
At the time, small. At the time, I think I was the 5th person. Patty, Tom, Maggie, Scott. Yeah, and then me. And then Ethan was contractor at the time. Now we're up to 8-ish, I think. I'd have to count.
How does a 5-person company, how does a 5-person studio get the Boston Globe?
Well, I mean, we're very attractive people. So
I've met you and Scott.
We're a handsome design firm, if I may say.
You are, but that doesn't necessarily win accounts.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that may be above my pay grade. I don't really...
You don't know how that happened?
I mean, it was before my time, if not.
Oh, so you weren't part of the pitch?
Mm-mm. No, no, that would have ruined it.
Okay, let me ask you this. You get that, and the 5 of you are also doing what? You guys were also doing jQuery, basically like developing jQuery for the world, or doing... What was your involvement in jQuery Mobile?
On paper, we were design leads, but we kind of ran point on jQuery Mobile. We didn't do a lot of it during the Globe project because that was, like you said, there's only a handful of us, and that was a pretty major deal.
But you spearheaded it.
Yeah. Yeah. And, during quieter times with client work, we'd pick that up and chip away at it, or we'd put aside a couple of hours a week to work on it.
Matt, over dinner the other night, you told me that you were a carpenter.
I was.
7 years ago, right? God. 7 years ago you were a carpenter?
Yeah, 7 or 8 years now.
And you got started as a web designer, ...
Oh, by way of hitchhiking. I'm going to leave out some of the gorier details, but I was a carpenter for a long time. And then I didn't have like a contractor's license or anything, so when the bottom kind of dropped out of the business... I ended up in retail. I worked at like a CompUSA. I ended up like the last job I had after being a line cook and a bouncer in a bunch of places was one of those kiosks in a mall. where you like yell at people as they go by, sir, what phone do you have? We got free Razor phones. One of those guys who are just not a fun person to be.
I had shit jobs too for like 10 yeah. years. It really makes you grateful when you find what you want to do.
It does. Are you kidding me? The day I got a job with a desk, it was February 14th, 7 years ago, a few days ago, was the day I got a job with a desk.
Congratulations.
Never forget. Thank you.
Also makes you less likely to be a prima donna. Some people, I mean, people who've been lucky enough to go right from, I don't know what, their parents pay for college, and then they start doing a professional job.
Yeah,
it's easier for them to be prima donnas, like easily get frustrated, but...
Yeah, and I don't fault anybody for following that path.
Okay,
I
mean, fair enough.
I would've if I had the choice, you know?
But if
there's times where I'm riding the T in the morning and I'm like, oh, it's cold and I'm tired, and then every once in a while I think to myself, I'm not going to fall off a frozen roof today. Yeah. So, probably not that bad.
I scraped asbestos from ceilings.
Oh.
And after the first day, this is when I was a kid in high school, and then at the end of the day, the foreman came and said, Zeltman, why aren't you wearing goggles?
Oh, no.
Yeah. And then, like, my eyes were burning. And when I came home, my dad said, oh, that causes cancer.
Any superpowers or anything from that? Or
no.
No
eye
lasers?
I thought I was going to get eyeball cancer. But so yeah, so there's, like, so tremendous gratitude. But I also, yeah. I'm not sure how you get from 7 years ago, you'd never heard of web design. You'd never done web design to...
I wasn't great with a computer, to tell you the truth.
You're doing, you know, so you're the chair of the W3C Responsive Images Community Group. You're in charge of the Elistapart open source code effort. You were a contributor to jQuery Mobile. Like, what the what? Like, how did that happen?
I haven't gone outside much in the past 7 years, so that's where you're getting at.
Okay, I see a lot of Amazon boxes.
Oh, I'm actually in a closet at the moment. I'm in the like the freight elevator closet in Filament Group.
That's your office?
Well, no, it's a big open floor plan office.
Oh, so
this is like the meeting hideout.
This is so you can have quiet while we conduct ourselves over the interwebs. Got
mm-hmm,
it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very attractive spot.
It's nice, right?
It looks like they painted some bricks, and then they painted over an old freight elevator.
Mm-hmm. I like it. It's rustic as character.
It's like, then there's like shelves that someone threw out and someone else threw up on.
Mm-hmm.
And
they've used them in a prison like beta devices.
Yeah, it looks like the furniture was used at a prison for a while, but the inmates complained.
It's a little slice of home for me in that way.
It is. It's very nice.
Oh, so yeah, I was, what was I doing? I was in retail yelling about phones, and then, you know, I didn't go to college or anything, and I had a carpentry background, and, you know, I wasn't especially well-to-do at the time. I was living in an illegal apartment, like a two-bedroom with five guys, just to make rent, and it was like, I'm done. I give up. I'm not doing this. I'm on the fast track to being a Walmart greeter when I'm 70. I'm out, and I quit my job with nothing lined up. And I bought a big green backpack, and my buddy dropped me off at the train station, and I just started walking south because a friend of mine lived down in Florida. He lived the furthest away of everyone I knew, so it was like, all right, I'm going there, I guess. I hitchhiked around the East Coast for about 2 months, got down there, crashed with him and his girlfriend for a month. She had recently gotten into modeling and needed a website. And so she came into the room I was crashing in, and she said, you know, computers and stuff, right? And I was like, I've used them, yeah, yeah. Could you make me a website? So I was like, yeah, probably. How bad could it be? And I don't even know what he had installed on, like, an old crummy Compaq, like his old spare computer. It was like a page maker or a front page of one of those. And I just started drawing squares until I figured out I could turn the squares into something that looked like a website. And that was the first site I did.
What did you read when you were getting started? Did you read? Did you like subscribe to Lynda.com?
No.
O'Reilly books?
No. I wouldn't have even known where to find that stuff. So I just started banging on it until things started shaping up.
Who did you read online?
At that time, nobody. And then once I got back, I started studying up a little bit because it was like, all right, I don't have a degree, I don't have a job, and I'm not going back to retail. So what am I doing? I guess I made that one website so I could maybe try doing this for a living. So that's when I started, you know, I was out buying books and I was screwing around in the CSS Zen Garden and getting actual legs under me instead of just drawing.
That was
going to
be my guess. Yeah. That was exactly going to be my guess.
Take it apart.
CSSN Garden was huge, what it did. Yep. Yeah, what it did for this community. Was Dave Shea's website was amazing.
Yeah, that was my exposure to CSS. That was like,
that was the best, what it does. That was the best demo. Up until that point, like I'd done stuff like that, but I'd done stuff like, look, you can make the type bigger or smaller, or
yes, specific.
Hey, you can reverse the colors for accessibility. Mm-hmm. Nobody really cared. I mean, a few people cared, but they already cared. A few people who were already bought into it liked it, or thought I was doing it wrong, and maybe they were right. But he was like, I mean, do you remember Mike Picks? It was all underground. He took the whole thing that Dave had written and he converted it into like animals living underground, corpses and stuff. And
I tore that one apart. That was one of the ones where I was like, you got to be kidding me that I could do this.
I don't think it was the most semantic thing at the time. I'm going to guess.
Oh, I don't remember,
but I'm guessing there were a lot of spans and divs just because otherwise how could you do some of the stuff? But
yeah, that was well before pseudo elements or anything. Yeah, that's for sure. But yeah, when I got back, I started digging into that stuff. I would pretend to take gigs on Craigslist, the ones that are like for exposure or whatever. And I never emailed the people offering them. I would just build whatever it was they described on Craigslist and then throw it away and then pick another one and build it.
Did you ever compare it to what eventually got built? Were you able to find out? Sorry, they're vacuuming in this hall.
That's okay.
People are going to think when they, do you hear the slight buzzing?
I heard it for a second there.
Yeah, they're going away now. I'm sorry, listeners. The listeners, the nice thing is this is technology, so people won't think some guy with a vacuum cleaner was vacuuming. They're going to think, oh, there's something wrong with the Wi-Fi. Or
must have been some bytes somewhere.
Yeah, dropped packets.
Transposed, sure.
Transposed.
Yes. I don't necessarily know what that means.
I don't either. I'm home today. Because my kid is sick. I'm still. We both have this like endless virus that's just intestinal.
Oh.
And because I'm here, the cats think they're getting dinner now. So if you hear boxes falling,
it's a protest.
Yeah, it's just the white cat. The black cat. The black cat just wants to sleep with you. Well, not with you, but he's like a dog. He just really wants to be wherever you are.
I get it. I taught my dog to punch his bowl when it's empty.
Smart.
Yeah, he just swats at it, so I hear it clanging around the kitchen when I need to feed him.
That was your dog wearing antlers in Sweet Ass Dog? Big Ass Dog? What was
Good
that?
Ass Dog.
Good Ass Dog.
Mm.
Yeah, really, you don't want Sweet Ass Dog. That would be the wrong thing.
No. Goodassdog.tumblr.com, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
It was him, yeah. Handsome little devil. He was in the talk a bunch of times, too.
So let me ask you this. How did you... You wrote two articles on responsive images for A List Apart.
Yes.
The second one was responsive images and web standards at the turning point. And that was where you were pretty much ready to give up. Not that you ever did, but...
I was ready to be less diplomatic about things, we'll say.
What happened? The W3C said... Why don't you folks – well, did you approach the what working group first, the people responsible for HTML5?
Yeah, because, I mean, not for nothing, all the RICG guys at that time, none of us were, like, standards people. We were just developers.
Right.
So we put together a good idea, and we're told, you tell it to the what working group, and we were like, hey, guys, awesome. We have a great idea. Let's work together and get this done. And it was, like, side eye from everybody. Like, what do you mean? What do you mean you have an idea? We do this. We come up with the ideas. And it was not untense how things played out from there. But the latest version of the picture specification, we came to working actively with the What Working Group, which feels like maybe we've made some progress.
Did you send Hixie Christmas gifts? What did you do? How did you get on their good graces?
He and I don't feel, are destined to be BFFs, he and I personally. But overall, I mean, the way it kind of played out was that there was the picture proposal, then there was the extended SRC set. Nobody liked the extended SRC set.
Except Apple.
Well, the browsers were into it because it was easier for them to implement. Developers were not into it because it was gross.
What was the quotation from the Apple guy?
For SRCN, it was that it was a grotesque perversion of the HTML language.
Good luck with that.
And then he added best of luck.
Best of luck.
Yes, web standards is fun.
So I always felt like my job in web standards was to understand what people much smarter than me were talking about and then put it in English for people who had real jobs.
I'm the noisemaker. I'm not one of the smart guys in the group. Yoav Weiss and Marcos Cesares. I have to ask him how I pronounce his last name. Those are both like second in command, and both brilliant, and both have done hundreds of hours of work apiece, without exaggeration.
I've heard Jason Grigsby say that he feels stupid. So that's a relief to me because I can't follow that guy.
Well,
He's a brilliant guy. And I'm just
kind of a jerk, though.
No, he's really not a jerk, but Grigsby, you're smiling, you're kidding. Grigsby is really a brilliant guy, works at Cloud4, as you know, and he's done a lot of this stuff too, but...
Mm. He's a sharp dude. I mean, he thinks that Batman could take Superman in a fight, which is obviously, that brings him down a couple of notches, but apart from...
That's not possible.
That's what I'm saying. I am saying exactly that. Superman could shoot lasers out of his eyes, done deal.
Superman could kill you just by sneezing.
Yeah, crush you into a diamond, throw you into the sun. Done deal.
He can make a diamond.
Mm-hmm. Like, no amount of Bruce Wayne Tybo is going to deal with that. There is no way.
I grew up in the 60s, and I used to love watching the 1950s, which they would show in reruns, like, just before dinner time. Did you ever see those with George Reeves?
No.
Noel Neal, and the kid, I forget the name of the kid who played Jimmy Olsen.
First Superman thing I used to watch when I was a kid was those, remember the old cartoons?
Yes, from the 40s, the Max Fleischer cartoons.
Fleischer, I couldn't think of the name.
They made Popeye and Betty Boop
Popeye
in the 30s. And then they did a Gulliver movie, right, which was like a feature length because they were frightened because Disney was getting into features and they wanted to do something. Then they ended up making these like 20-minute long super, they're the best.
If it weren't for Popeye permanently linking vegetables to cursing and violence, I would not have any interest in vegetables.
Did you see The Wolf of Wall Street?
I did not. I'm terrible about it.
There's a very interesting thing that happens with a Popeye and cocaine.
Okay.
That's all I'll say. You should definitely see it.
With you so far, doesn't seem like too much of a stretch from the original plot of the cartoon.
I mean, if you think about it, it's kind of...
It was a shady cartoon.
Well, anyway, so the Max Fleischer Superman, my daughter will watch those. She will not watch the 1950s TV show. And I've tried to, like, you know, you're old, so you have nostalgia for your childhood. And you're like, and she likes other old stuff but she just, it's too stupid. The plots are too stupid, but she loves the Fleischer.
I mean, those were beautifully done, too.
Yeah, they're beautifully done. They're pains.
Yeah, yeah, no question. Yeah, I watched. I think they got them on iTunes now.
They're insanely racist. Also,
oh yes, yeah, they're terrible.
Just horrible.
So were Bugs Bunny cartoons, man. I grew up on those, and those things are horrible.
Didn't the Three Stooges were racist?
Oh yeah,
basically everything was racist.
Basically everything was racist. That's true. Anything old.
I was telling my daughter today, like when I was a kid, there was a period where only white people were on TV.
Yeah. I used to watch the hell out of MASH when I was a kid, and I think they had a person of Asian descent on that show like twice.
That was the Korean War.
Yeah. and it was still...
There's a problem.
Yeah.
And MASH was liberal. Right. MASH had a liberal agenda, so they were progressive politics and, you know, among the less racist people of their time. So think of that.
I did want to be Hawkeye when I grew up, though.
He's not doing so well now, though.
Isn't he?
Is he dead? Which one's Hawkeye?
Is he dead? What the hell's his name in real life?
Is it Alan Alda?
Alan Alda.
I love him, but I totally don't trust him. He seems like there's a Woody Allen movie with Alan Alda where he just plays a sleazy producer who acts like a feminist in order to get women.
Is he too good at it? Is it to the point where it's colored your opinion of him forever?
He's such a good actor that, it makes me think this is that guy. Because he always was kind of a feminist in the 70s and 80s. And I always thought, I bet this goes well with the ladies.
Maybe he's drawn on something there.
Handsome celebrity, talking about women's rights and have another drink, honey, kind of stuff. Not that I'm that cynical, but
well,
pretty cynical.
Sketchy stuff.
I get that feeling now when some of the women's issues come up in our community, which are real issues. And when women bring them up, I'm like, yeah, I'm down. But when guys bring them up or become spokesmen for them, I'm always very mistrustful of those guys. I always think that they're really just being sleazy without naming names.
Yeah.
Even some of my friends are that way. And I'm just thinking, yeah, I like you. But you know what?
There's a fine line there.
Find another
way. You don't want to swoop in.
Find another way in.
Like you're protecting. Because then you're sort of part of the problem, aren't you?
Right, because you're trying to protect. Exactly. You're like the white knight of feminism.
I'll handle this,
ladies. And you're like, wait a minute. If you're a feminist, then the fact that you're rushing to the rescue really seems contradictory.
Yeah. But on the other hand, these are issues that impact, you know, good friends of mine, my own sister, that sort of thing. And it's everybody's responsibility to kind of point out when people are not being their best.
Yeah, I just feel like men have to just do the right thing and shut up about it.
I, as like a general rule, try to shut up as much as possible.
This show wouldn't be possible, though, if we were doing that today.
I'm good at sign language.
I've heard that about you. I want to ask one quick question, and then we're going to have to take a little sponsor break. But I want to know, Marquis Marquis, what's the deal there?
Oh, man, that was the rule when I was growing up. Whenever somebody called the house, it was, you know, it was Marquis Home Renovation. It was run out of the house.
So, and it was Marquis.
It was, yeah, Marquis, because one French-Canadian, he married into the family. It was the whole thing. around town, it was Marquis. Like, it was Matt Marquis versus Matthew Marquis. Sounds very businessy.
Were you going to get beaten up if you had said the name's Marquis?
No, God, no. No, it was just, I just grew up, like, when we were doing businessy things, it was Marquis. If not, in general, like, we called each other Marquis. It wasn't like a protect my lunch money deal. It was just kind of how I grew up with the names, I guess.
But you're from North Cambridge?
That's right. Rinjeff.
I always assumed that it was that was the issue, that if you sounded too fancy or like you'd gone to school, you'd just get the crap kicked out of you. So,
I was never accused of being fancy.
Okay. But so mispronouncing your own name was...
Well, technically, I mean, like, I think in England they say Marquis.
Well, right, because they love to mispronounce French words in England.
Well, I mean,
I'll
take it. Oh, is that a thing?
That's a thing, yes.
Wow. So I guess that's even more Irish.
I wonder how many groups I can offend in today's broadcast. I seem to be like on a little tear here.
I'm scared. I'm nervous.
Yeah, you're not participating. You're not. You're fine.
Our opinions do not represent those of our employers.
Yeah. My favorite one is, the co-founder of this radio network, right? Mike Montero.
He's never offended anyone, has he?
He says,
seems like
opinions are not those of my boss, who is an asshole, on his Twitter.
Well, I mean, I guess that's not probably his boss's opinion. So that checks out.
Yeah.
That checks out.
I need to do a little something here. I need to ring a cash register. Here we go.
Sure.
This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Zeldman. That's Zeldman. Squarespace is constantly improving their platform with new features, new designs, and even better support. Squarespace is constantly improving their platform with new features, new designs, and even better support. They have beautiful designs for you to start with and all the style options you need to create a unique website for you or your business. Squarespace has over 20 highly customizable templates for you to choose from. It's incredibly easy to use, but if you want some help, Squarespace has an amazing support team that works 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It starts at just $8 a month, and every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look great on every device, every time. Start a trial with no credit card required and start building your website. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code Zeldman to get 10% off and to show your support for the Big Web Show. And thanks. Thank you, Squarespace. And now, Matt, back to you. Matt, I have a problem in that, again, I sort of alluded to this before. I felt like my achievement in web design was to help simplify it and make it accessible to people. And now I feel like it's getting away from me. When the people I work with, I don't understand what they're doing. I mean,
it's getting more complicated. There's no question to that.
I can still, with my skills, make a fine site. But things like responsive images and negotiating the user's bandwidth and all the other, you know, lazy loading and all the other stuff that's taken for granted now, I haven't done that yet. I have people for that, but I haven't done it myself, and I don't really know that I could.
Yeah, and I mean, part of it's that's really hard at this point, which is a lot of why we've been on the whole responsive images crusade, getting it, like, baked in at the browser level, get a syntax that everybody could just pick up and use, copy-paste if they have to, instead of saying, okay, go find a plugin.
Right, and the syntax is?
Pretty straightforward, matches up with existing things.
Source equal, you know, big.jpg, and then you have another one that says, like, small.jpg, and the browser negotiates.
And we wanted something that lined up pretty close with, like, the video element, stuff we're already using. You know, that same parent element with source children. You know what I mean?
Now, you know the technique where people take a deliberately, basically save a JPEG at the at high resolution, but at the lowest possible quality?
Yes, and compressive images.
Right, compressive images. And then make it look small on the page, and it actually loads faster than a high-res image. It looks better than a high-res image.
Yes.
There's some kind of strange magic.
Total witchcraft.
That's going to have to go away once the picture element is actually in browsers, right? Things like that won't work at all.
You could still use it, but it's a hack. It's a stopgap. It's us kind of grasping at straws, like we need solutions to this problem. Once we have a solid solution we can kind of build on, then hopefully that stuff will
go. It can go away like Cypher.
Yes.
Or QFon.
Right. Which, like, were exactly great back in the day. They were amazing.
They were amazing. Yeah. God bless those people. But now, right. Now we now can
you
use
look
WebPon.
At it, it's
now you
like, why?
Type.
Yes. Exactly. Okay.
So do you see web design, web development eventually becoming simpler once this next generation of standards hurdles are solved, once these next generation of technical challenges are solved? Or do you see it continuing to get more and more complex with all these devices and everything?
Oh, I think it's going to keep getting more and more complicated. I think what we're trying to do by standardizing this is mitigate that somewhat, so you're less, you know, groping in the dark thinking I have a problem, I don't know how to solve it. Now there's more syntax. It's more stuff to learn from the get-go, but it's simpler than saying you're on your own. Here's a link to GitHub, find something, you know?
Do you remember the Jeff Croft article about, in early January, called Standards Killed, or what was it? Browsers Killed the Web Standards Star, HTML Killed the
Web. Oh, yeah.
You know, I can find it quickly enough.
No, I know the one you mean, yeah. Saying that, like, HTML, CSS specialists are kind of, I don't know, passé? How do you say that?
Right, because...
You know, not as in demand.
Right, because the fact that you're good at writing semantic markup and you can do CSS layout means nothing in a world where Sass and, I don't know, Wist, I'm just making up these names now.
Mm. That sounds like
Gruber and
Punchface. I would
back,
use some
Backbone
of these.
And Slacks and Turniphead. I don't know. I don't know any of these things. It's terrifying to me to, like, know so very little about.
I don't know. I'm a recent SaaS semi-convert. I think as much as it makes a lot of things easier, if you don't already have, like, a really solid foundation for that stuff anyway, you kind of make a mess of stuff. Like, it abstracts away a lot of the scarier CSS stuff that it and you might be doing, if that makes sense.
Once you learn its syntax, it lets the computer do some of the calculations for things like percentage, things that...
Yeah. I mean, everything. It's wicked handy. But I mean, like it allows you to put a loop in your CSS, which is incredible. Huge, hugely powerful. But if you don't pay attention to what you're doing, you end up with 300 lines in your actual output CSS because that loop keeps on a looping and putting out a bunch of stuff you may not need. You know, it makes it a lot easier, but it's not, it doesn't necessarily make anything better, is I guess what I'm getting at.
I'm going to read you 8 guidelines and 1 rule for responsive images.
Okay. Sounds familiar?
Yeah, it's from back in the day. It's from April, not April Fool's Day, but the day after April Fool's Day, 2013, by Jason Grigsby. He still alludes to this, so I don't think that much has changed. And I want to get your reaction to his guidelines and rule. The first one is use vector-based images or font icons wherever you can.
Well,
yeah, me too.
I agree with the use vector-based.
Mm-hmm. Where you can.
Where you can, when appropriate. I'm not a big fan of icon fonts.
Because
there are layers upon layers of complication to using them in like a responsible and accessible way. And then there's all the planning fallbacks.
Fails to load.
Right. What does it fall back to? I mean, most basic case, it falls back to like the letter J, which is obnoxious. It's not really much of a fallback. And a screen reader is going to read that as J, which is not helpful to anyone and, in fact, confusing.
I remember a few years ago seeing rectangles on web pages where someone had made something in Windows, and it must have looked right in IE Windows, and they were probably using like typographically correct punctuation or something. It looked like they were typographically correct apostrophes or quotation marks or something. But what I was getting was boxes.
It's a part of the Unicode range that their OS or their browser supports. I mean, it could be any combination too, but yours did not. So you get a little square, which is very, very common. If you were to use, a lot of people advocate you use a part of the Unicode range that's outside of what's actually standardized, the private use area, which is like no man's land.
And why would people advocate that?
Ah, because sometimes if you're using like something in the standardized Unicode area that has broad support, you're apt to have it read that thing out loud with a screen reader, or it just renders inconsistently from browser to browser. So people have started treating the private use area as kind of a non-fallback character when sometimes it is, and sometimes it ends up being like emoji in total nonsense. Basically, my stance on icon fonts is that they are a very, very clever hack that I am not interested in using in so much as I can avoid it.
My issue with, and I love SVG, my issue with vector-based images is if I've got a news photo of the president, I can't really replace that with SVG.
Right.
Now, I've been thinking lately about, I don't know if you've ever seen the print edition of the Wall Street Journal, but they used to do this thing where they made what looked like engravings. They wanted to have this very old fashioned look, so they never actually put photographs in the Wall Street Journal. They would put engravings of people's faces. And I thought, there are probably Photoshop filters one could run and then touch up that would make etched line art that looked like etchings and that you could then convert that to SVG. But then I thought, but the number of vector points that would require would be so complex that I don't know that you'd be saving anything over a JPEG or a PNG.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you'd be surprised. SVGs contain a ton of repetition. So once minified, the same way you would minify, you know, any HTML, and if you serve them up via gzip, they compress down pretty small.
I want SVG that I can put a photo into.
That's a thing. You can actually set in the CSS within the SVG, you can like specify a background image like you would anywhere else, or you can use an image tag inside of an SVG.
Right, but not to compress the image.
Yeah, it wouldn't do you any good or anything.
Right.
Yeah. But you could in theory. There's been a lot of talk. Whoop, we get a cat. There's been a lot of talk about like a responsive image format, which sounds great. Like that tends to be people
like JPEG 2000 or...
Right. And my go-to response is that JPEG 2000 is called JPEG 2000 for a reason, and it still hasn't really caught on.
Right.
But yeah, that's, I mean, that's always the
second.
There's
more complexity to it. I mean, there's so much complexity to an image that would be aware of the bandwidth and the layout. It would have to not just understand the breakpoints of the whole layout, but understand where the image was fitting in the layout. And
right. I mean, any of that sizing would have to be done based on the viewport, since information about the layout won't be available when the image is fetched.
From the DOM.
Even further, it's impossible for the browser to know anything about the image to make a good decision until it's requested all of it and can kind of take its measurements from there. You know what I mean?
In the meantime, the person's dragging on the browser window and resizing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's... The format thing is tricky. There's I can shoot you over a link so you have it. There's a couple of blog posts. People in the RICG branch off every so often and kind of put some thought into this. And then every time it kind of comes back like, well, that's a good idea, but can't really play out, you know?
Okay. So I think we've spoken on that first one. Here's the next. Jason Grigsby, by the way, agrees that here's the next one. Encourage people to upload the highest quality source possible. As prices for high-density screens go down, they're starting to show up in more and more devices in larger sizes.
That checks out.
So what you're really talking about is having a good CMS and building good functions into your CMS.
Right. Have that highest – I mean, you know, it doesn't mean serve it up to everybody, but have that highest quality version somewhere on the server. Yeah. So times change and you need to add a new source or whatever, it's there.
Right. So you write a function that says so now there's an Apple Retina Cinema display, mm-hmm. and you can detect for it reliably somehow. I don't know how.
Right.
And so you write another function that says serve this image at actual size, or serve this image at half size or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Provide an automatic image resizing and compression service. Again, that's on the server, and again, that seems like a no-brainer to me.
Yeah.
Okay. Images, number four, images can be resized to any size with URL parameters.
That's a thing. There are services that will do that. So the same way I said the browser can't really know anything about an image until it's requested it, mm-hmm. that kind of allows you to tip the server off.
Kind of like the old thing of writing image source equal height equal blank, width equal blank. Like filling in the height and width allows the browser to start rendering space for it immediately. And omitting those means that in theory the browser has to wait until everything else on the page is loaded.
So what this does is it's the same principle, but it's actually sending that information to the server where it's getting the image. So then the server can send down an appropriately sized image.
Do all servers do that? No.
No. God, no. The services out there that do it.
So it's Amazon would have something like that.
I'd be willing to bet. Yeah, and there's a couple of services specifically that handle responsive images, which is great and works great. And I know a lot of the big CDNs are going to be getting more and more into that over time as it becomes a bigger and bigger issue. But yeah, so I'm agreed with them.
Number five, provide automated output of your image markup. And I think he's talking about picture fill here, and I'm going to assume that you agree with that.
Oh, yeah. This is, you know, just make sure it's something that a CMS could spit out, which picture fill, any of the above.
Number six, provide a way to override resized images for art direction needs. Mm-hmm. For most sites, the most important use of responsive images will be to provide different resolutions of images. That's what we call resolution switching. But occasionally you'll find that simply resizing an image isn't sufficient. And the example here, and I think it's canonical, is there's a big picture of Obama at a steel plant and, you know, and, you know, giving a lecture about the American worker or something.
I'm going to end up with that as a tattoo.
And then this image, this...
Oh, yeah.
Everybody uses this, right?
This is the one, yep.
This is the one. But then when you shrink it, because now in the responsive layout or on a different device, now the image is smaller, you'd actually want to crop in tighter on the president instead of having a tiny picture of an unknown man standing in front of who knows what.
Instead, in front of an Autobot, yeah.
Right.
Right. So, yeah, that's what we call the art direction.
The art direction use case. And how exactly is that supposed to be handled?
I mean, we could do it now with CSS, with a giant image, and just kind of crop using overflow hidden and that sort of thing. But we're still requesting that giant image. So basically what this is a means of serving an image source that's appropriate to the layout it's being used in, to bandwidth restraints, and to the layout to better focus on the like the focal point of the image. That background stuff, the machinery in the background of that image is kind of a nice to have, you know? And it's great. Big widescreen display, yeah, show all the information we can. On a tiny phone display, we want to make sure that we're first representing the focus of the image and including that stuff secondary. You know what I mean?
Although, and I don't know how you do this, but in theory, if you subscribe to the idea that everyone should get the same content,
right,
and well, accessibility, then even when you crop in tight, you'd want to then have like hovering left and right arrows, let's say, indicating right. to the user that there is background that they can scroll and see if they choose to.
Yeah. I mean, it has to be absolutely deemed non-essential part of the image that's sort of a nice to have. And one of the big, one of the huge, huge ongoing requirements for all this responsive images stuff with the art direction use case is that it is not so you can swap in a thing that says, visit us on your iPhone when you're on a small screen. It has to be the same content image. It all has to be represented by the same alt attribute. You know,
well,
what
this
I mean?
Is we're assuming that everyone working on this is a good person.
Let's hope.
And for a good company and not jerks. But
right.
yeah, all this stuff will be abused.
Nobody on the internet is jerks.
We can guarantee that all this. My dad called me the other day because his old friend that he hadn't heard from in 20 years was in Nigeria and just needed $2,000 to get out. He'd send him an email, and I said, "No, that's a scam, Dad.
Yeah,
that's not your friend."
Sounds
said,
like a
what?
Scam.
Why would Peter be in Nigeria? I said, "He's not. But why would he have kept his passport but lost his wallet?" I said, "He didn't."
Not so much.
Yeah. So.
Though I did just find out 6 times today that I'm nominated for the Global Who's Who. So all I need to fill out a form and send them some money.
That's actually,
it's a big day for me.
I was going to say that's not a scam, but I mean it is, but that's an old fashioned scam.
Yeah. It's a less illegitimate scam.
Yeah. That's here's this business that existed before the internet. It was always a scam.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's possible that someone's scamming you and you're not even going to really get into who's who. They're just going to clean out your bank account, but it's equally possible.
And I also have Save Big on private yacht rentals, so things are looking up.
I'm going to start emailing people telling them that I can get them into LinkedIn.
Got an invite.
LinkedIn has more members than Who's Who.
Huh.
And with my service, I can get you listed on – not only that, I can help you find other people you can connect to who can vouch for your skills.
And if you act now, you'll throw in Facebook at no additional fee.
I will. I'll get them a Facebook page. With some type of custom URL.
Ooh.
It'll be perhaps just a numeric URL that's different from everyone else, but that's
could
custom.
Be, but it's still unique. Most numbers are unique, leading mathematicians say.
Okay. Integrate number 7. We're going back to this.
Oh yeah.
Integrate image compression best practices. That seems
yes.
like a no-brainer. Optimize images.
Do it right. Yeah.
Blur the background.
Yeah, even
stuff.
When we can send a more appropriate source, make sure it's as small as it can be.
Way before all this stuff, that's what I used to do. And I made a whole style out of using like Smart Blur and what's the other one? Surface Blur in Photoshop. And I remember when I started having other people work for me that they would often take great pride in rendering crisp JPEGs. And when I'd say, no, really, like they go, oh, that looks funny. I'm like, yeah, I know, but it's cool. Look, this is like 8K instead of like 42K.
Yes.
But so now that's coming back. I'm glad. I think a lot of this stuff in a way reminds me of the old days of web design.
The old low source attribute there.
Yeah. Mm. I want that. I want low source.
I would not mind.
You never got to work with that because you've only been doing this for 7 years, but that was a real thing.
It's true. I would rather have high source, I think. I'd rather load the SRC with the small one and then selectively the big one.
Yeah, I get that. What do you think of the idea of loading just like a standard definition image and then giving the user a button that lets them load high def if they want?
Oh, I'm into it. There's a branch of the PictureFill repository that does that. It is a little like YouTube style HD SD toggle at the bottom right of the image.
I have mixed feelings about it because I hate asking the user, unless it's like type size, where they might have a problem and actually need to make type bigger.
Right.
But other than that, I kind of hate, it always feels to me like as a designer, I haven't done my job. I'm just being a jerk. Like,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it reminds me of the old days where people would say, choose the background color, customize your portal experience. And then everyone would I don't know if you've ever used Windows black leather jacket from Windows 3.1 back in the day, but it was basically a way to make the Windows operating system almost completely unusable.
Nice.
And that's what it's the first thing that your uncle would do when he got a new computer.
Just like, screw with the colors.
Yeah, like, wow, this is great. The text is green, the background's purple, the scroll bars are brown.
I remember the hot dog stand theme. I remember that.
That was red and yellow. I think it's from the same time.
Yeah, bright red and yellow.
But that's what people will do. And I just feel like if you're actually a designer, you make a decision, you give the best experience possible, and you say, here you go. And
yeah.
I know this is a little different.
Tough. Yeah, it's tough where that best experience is so variable in this case. And originally there was a lot of talk about having like a bandwidth media query where we could say
that would be ideal.
But well, I don't know. I'm two ways on it.
If I go to Apple's website with my laptop and I'm using Starbucks Wi-Fi, this is not super fast. Then I don't really want the high def image, even though I've gotten a Retina computer.
Right.
But if I'm in my office and I'm plugged into, you know, my network, then yes, show me the product in the shiniest, nicest. If there were a way for us to know or for the server to know all those things.
So what's tough with that though is when you then go from Apple to Facebook, they're going to draw that line in a completely different place. They're going to say, well, if they're over X bandwidth, they surely want high-resolution images, you know? So you end up with an inconsistent experience, which is maybe worse.
Which is why you end up saying to the user, let the user decide.
Right. So the plan, ultimately, when there is a standard in, is that the SRC set attribute that controls resolution switching will sort of act as a suggestion to the browser. So the user could override that with a preference at the browser level that says, send me high-resolution images over this threshold, or only send me low-resolution images. You could have a box you tick off, and that way you get a consistent experience across the board.
You mean for the power user who goes into their browser preferences, because 99% of humanity does not.
Right. But on mobile browsers, they could expose that in like a bigger way. They could have a right down on the menu bar, they could have a little tick box that says,
does this look blurry? Hit here.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But yeah, I worry about, there's a lot of technical reasons why the bandwidth media query couldn't play out, but I worry that too many places would take exception. They'd say, well, our product is so good and our images are so wonderful that surely everyone will want to see these.
That's what Apple does.
It's worth the wait. Exactly.
That's what Apple does.
So if they had that bandwidth media query, they would set that line in a very different place than I might. I'd rather leave that up to the user than make that decision for them, you know?
Well, see, now if you're watching Netflix or Amazon streaming, they negotiate that. They're constantly testing bandwidth and feeding back. You know, so you start watching a TV show on Netflix and it's blurry. And then they go, hey, you got more speed than this. Let's try improving the quality. And then it starts to look good. And then they're like, wow, you really have a lot of speed. Let's go high def. You can just watch. I mean, it's kind of the fun of when you start a new show.
You let it ramp up.
It's like it comes into focus.
Yeah. I mean, it's tricky where they have kind of a captive audience for that, no pun intended. Like, you're not going to be watching something on Netflix and then click one link and a split second later be on Hulu.
Right.
You know?
Right. Because the more you're changing servers, the more... And then there's just the fact that bandwidth constantly changes anyway.
Right. So it's something the browser really needs to handle, and something we can expose to the user as something they can decide on. But it's not something we should be deciding for them. It's complicated. Responsive images, it turns out, are complicated.
All of this has gotten very complicated, but we are one of the people figuring it out. I love you for that. And,
thank you.
For pronouncing your own name two different ways. And for being a tough street fighter who's like the same size as me, because it gives me hope that that the little people can rise up.
I might be shorter. I hate to break it to you.
You are a little shorter. I didn't want to say that, though.
Oh, no, I don't blame you for noticing either.
It's an inch.
We take what we can get.
It's only an inch.
I see someone shorter than me right away. I'm like, hooray, which only refers to Prince and Wolverine.
It's weird. I better not. You know what? I have nothing to say now. And
don't do it.
I want to thank Matt Marquis for spending his time with us. I want to thank our sponsors today. And I want to thank you, the listeners, for being good web people. And with no further ado, thank you. This has been another great episode. Another great, gosh, what am I doing? This has been another episode been of great. some quality level to be determined by you of the Big Web Show.
I say you own it. I say it was great.
It was great. Thank you. It was great because of you, so thank you.
I try my best. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.